Latter-day Saint Home Educators is pleased to bring you this audio presentation, recorded live during the July 2016 Home Education Conference, held at Utah State University.
Excited to be here with you this morning, for several reasons, and I want to share those reasons with you. First of all, when I get asked to speak at a conference, what begins to happen is I start to feel a certain sense of presence of these people that I'm going to meet and I'm going to visit with, and I'm going to see their eyes and their faces and hear some of their stories, and then. Ideas start to come into my mind, so I get really curious to meet the people I get to speak to. So it's so good to see you today. It's good to see your eyes. It's good to see you here, and I just want to acknowledge you for taking stewardship of your children's education. A second reason why I'm really excited to be here is that I've had. Several things in my life turn upside down in the last couple of years, one of those being my health, and I've struggled for 28 months, and only in the last 4 weeks have I really felt like I'm well again, which is so exciting to me. There were periods of time when I couldn't follow a recipe because I couldn't remember how much I had put in, and I couldn't actually remember enough to follow. I began to stutter. I didn't have the strength to go into a grocery store. People did my grocery shopping for me. Homeschooling was an interesting experience during those years, and I want to say that you can home educate even through a serious illness such as I went through. One of the really fun memories I have is that my visiting teacher said, "I'm coming over to clean your house," and I told my boys, they're 14, 16, and 18 now, they were 12, 14, and 16 at the time when it first happened, and I said, "Jill's coming over to clean our house. She's going to clean your bathroom." And my 12-year-old said, "That seems really weird that someone would clean our bathroom." So he said, "Oh, I've got this handled." When Jill knocked on the door, he met her there. He said, "We're good. We've got it handled." And so they took care of it. It was really fun to watch how my family picked up, and the lessons that were learned might not have been math and social studies or whatever like that. It was, what do you do when life gets hard? You turn to the Lord and you pull together, and that's what we learned for several months, a couple years actually, as a family. So I'm excited to be able to be here. I didn't think I would be able to run again. I didn't think I'd be able to walk more than 10 minutes. I didn't think I'd be able to come and speak and do something that I love so much. And here I am, and I'm very excited to be here and quite nervous. Third reason why I'm really excited to be here is because I enjoy the spirit that accompanies this venue. And I am drawing upon the spirit, and I am inviting you to pray for me and to pray for us that we might be edified and learn together as we are, as we talk today. So I want to ask you, I just told you how I am. So I want to ask you, how are you? Okay? In our society, we ask, how are you? But how often do we stop and look into somebody's eyes and say, really, how are you? So I'm not just asking the how are you, and I want you to say fine or good. I want you to ask and answer, how are you, in an authentic and real way. Deep down, inside, what would that look like? Okay, on the count of three, everybody can say, choose a word, and okay, at the count of three, ready, go. One, two, three, how are you? Okay, let's try that again. Let's try it again. Okay, I kind of got it off, so I want to hear it. Say it strong. Own how you are today. Own it. How are you? All right, that's better. Okay. How are you feeling this morning? Maybe that was encompassed in that. Did you have a feeling in how are you? Or was it just a... So if you were to choose one word, One word, what would it be? How are you feeling this morning? Who said that? Optimistic, yay. Call it out. How are you feeling this morning? Hopeful. You're here. You're going to get help, right? Hopeful. Hope comes with change. Okay? Happy. Yay, we have a happy one. Okay? Grateful. What? Grateful. Great. Is anyone to own like a feeling that we would like to say is negative? Okay, stressed. Anyone want to own overwhelmed? Okay, if you want to own overwhelmed, okay, here you are. And you're at this conference and you're going to get lots of ideas and you might go home more overwhelmed than you came. Just warning you, okay. Here's some list of feelings that you might like to tap into. The one that I noticed was not up there is overwhelmed. And they just must not have made that list with home educating mothers in mind. Uncomfortable, I don't know, confident. How many of you feel confident? You can own it if you do. I mean, if you do feel confident, awesome. We have some that feel confident. How old and how long have you been homeschooling? That's where your confidence comes from, right? I can see that. Okay, if you're young, you might not feel so confident. Okay, I have a point going here with this. You might feel like this man, yes, I don't have to go to work today, I'm here. But I notice we don't have very many dads. Yay for the dads. We should just all cheer for the dads who are, yes, yes, yes. We need dads. And dads are an important part of home education. Please invite your husbands to be part of it and let them know how important they are. But if you're here and you don't have to be at work today, you can be cheering like this guy is. Maybe that's your feeling. Maybe you're really excited that you don't have to attend to your child who likes to do this today, right? Maybe your child is at grandma's house today and you don't have to deal with this. But do you ever feel like that? I mean, I so related. And then maybe you don't want to, you know, maybe you don't have to deal with this today either. Okay? I feel like that sometimes too. Maybe you just feel like this. Okay, I've got some, yeah, that's how I feel. I feel out like I'm out of order. I've come to get fixed. Right? Okay. And then maybe you're just, you know, everything's sweet and, you know, until in 5 minutes from now, it erupts, right? And you've got it all handled and all the rest of us are going, we don't like you very much. No. Or maybe it's just this. Just a mixture of everything. All right. Why even do this? I want you to ask the question, what is the feeling you most often experience as you go into the day-to-day of homeschooling? As you face that day-to-day, what is the predominant emotion that you experience? Okay, anxiety. Okay, call them out. Stress? Busyness? Who said fear? Someone said fear? Okay. What was that? Doubt? These are the predominant ones, right? In this moment, we might feel happy, encouraged, hopeful. We're getting help, right? But when we're in the day-to-day, I want you to pay attention to what the predominant emotion is that you're experiencing. When a mentor asked me this last January, the word that came to my mind was overwhelmed. I have 7 kids. 3 have flown the coop. I have 4 at home. Feels like I still have 20. I don't know what the deal is. I don't know how that math works, but maybe it's just that they're all 3 teenage boys, and they're big, and their presence is big. I don't know what it is, but the feeling was overwhelm. Could be health. So I want you to be in touch with that, because the emotion that we're experiencing comes out into the education, the home environment, and there's a way to handle that emotion. So here are some ideas. Overwhelmed, frustrated, exhausted, angry, upset, discouraged, clueless, anxious. Or excited, enthusiastic, hopeful, encouraged, understanding, competent, patient, and peaceful. In Galatians 5:22, it talks to us about the fruits of the Spirit. This is why it's so important. The fruits of the Spirit are these: love, joy, peace, long-suffering, gentleness, goodness, faith, meekness, and temperance. Now you're also familiar with the scripture that says that we're to teach by the Spirit. If we're feeling afraid and anxious and overwhelmed, is that a fruit of the Spirit? So we need to pay attention to what we're feeling. And there's a way to work with that. So our emotions, we all have them. They're both positive and negative. We term them as positive and negative. Actually, they're just information. Emotions are simply information. Whether they're your child's or whether they're yours, they're simply information. And they're an opportunity for growth and learning and instruction. So say you're feeling anxious. You're feeling overwhelmed. What do you do about it? The only way I've known how to deal with it is to take it to the Lord and ask for the enabling power of the atonement to help me know how to change that and to help me change that. That's the only way I've been able to do it. And the other thing that helps is to have compassion for myself. Recognize that I have it and work through it instead of just ignoring it. So I now understand that emotions are really valuable information. We're going to talk a little bit more about that in a minute. And okay, so this conference, you're going to be here for 2 days, and I hope you've come with questions. I hope you've listed them out, and if you haven't listed them out, I hope you will list them out. And even while I'm talking right now, just list out some of the questions, your most important questions you need answered. I'm going to give just a brief, before I get right into the meat of what I want to share, I'm going to give a brief suggestion or two of how I feel you might get more from this conference. So one of them is to come with questions. So ask those questions. Write them down. These are the questions I need answered. I don't know how to teach my 8-year-old to read. I don't know what to do with my 2-year-old who is creating a ruckus while we're trying to have school. I don't know what to do with my teenager who seems distant, unhappy. Okay, lots of things. So ask those questions. Put them down on paper. The answers will come. Today, specifically right now in the keynote, I want to encourage you to listen in a different way. I am going to give information. A lot of it's just simply my story. It's my journey, and I feel that even though your journey will be different, that our journeys together, sharing them, understanding them, is strengthening. And it helps us. So I'm going to be giving you information that's my information. I would encourage you to take notes on that, whatever you feel inclined to, but in the margin, listen to the customized counsel that will be coming to you from the Spirit, the impressions that will be just for you. In fact, I might be talking about A and B, and the Spirit might be talking with you about X, Y, and Z. Listen to that. And then at the end of the conference, as you go through all of the classes at the end of the conference, go back through those impressions and notice the themes. There will be a certain theme. You might see something repeated 1, 2, 3, 4 times. When God's trying to get through to me, it will come to me inevitably. The message will come to me within 2 or 3 weeks, same thing, over and over and over again. So I encourage you to do that. And then just choose one thing to focus on. I know you're going to want to go out of here and focus on 1,000 things. Focus on one thing until you've got it, and then go to the next. The one thing that will make the biggest difference in your home. All right. I want to share with you my journey. I'm doing this mainly because I've noticed how I grew up as a home educator, and maybe I can shortcut your journey. Maybe it won't have to be 20 years long for you to get to the point where I am. Maybe there's no other way. But maybe if you understood the journey I took, it might instruct your journey. So I want to talk about my childhood experiences. When I loved school. I absolutely loved school. Didn't miss a day, ever. If I did, it was a tragedy. And I did really well. My favorite parts of school were elementary school were when the teacher took us to the library on a weekly basis, and when the teacher read to us from a classic after lunch. Those were, or in recess, I played with the boys, I was the quarterback, I was the pitcher with all the boys. And but there was one thing about my education that I noticed And that is my sixth grade teacher started saying, well, we need to get you ready for junior high because that's when education really happens. And then my junior high teacher kept saying, we need to get you ready for high school because that's where it's really going to happen. And then I got to high school, and within, I think I was beginning my junior year, I thought, they're just telling me we're doing all the college prep, so I guess that's when education really happens. And I'm here for two more years, and I felt like something was really empty. Something was missing, and I didn't know what that was. As an elementary school child, 8, 9, 10, 11, it's really fun. My 10-year-old is in this. She's 10, and she's in this phase right now. She's reading a lot of biographies about children, Childhood of Famous Americans. It's a series of biographies that are written about great people for children. Anyway, I read biography after biography after biography. In fact, it was my favorite section of the library at the school and in the public library. My favorite thing about the summer was riding my bike the mile to the library and just getting lost in the coolness of the library, snuggling up on a beanbag, reading about the lives of great people. I read about Jane Addams, Abraham Lincoln, Martin Luther King, Madame Curie, and all kinds of people. And their stories touched my little girl heart. And I wanted my life to make a difference like theirs had. I wanted to be able to grow up and do something that mattered. Now, even at that age, I knew I was going to be a mom. I knew I was going to have a lot of kids. I just knew that was, but I also felt like there was something inside of me that wanted to make a difference. And I don't believe that's a very abnormal or extraordinary belief or desire. I think we all have that desire. We all want to do something, make a difference in some way. Anyway, I kept thinking that maybe, you know, next year in school that would happen, and maybe next year in school that would happen, and maybe next year in school would happen. But I went through all of education, all the way up through my bachelor's, and just still feeling like something was missing, and I didn't know what that was. And I also didn't feel like I didn't know how I was going to make a difference. Well, I settled down and got married after I graduated from with my bachelor's, and began having children. And very early on, I started to have this inclination that I didn't want to have my children go through what I went through. It was kind of like feeling bored, feeling like something was missing, feeling like just a lot of emptiness. I didn't want them to have that. So I got closer to my first going to kindergarten. We ended up putting him in kindergarten for the first year, and I noticed that it just felt kind of weird. It just didn't feel right. So first grade, summer before first grade, I agonized, what do I do, what do I do, what do I do, and finally came to the fact that, yep, we're going to homeschool. That was after sitting in the first grade class with him for 2 days and watching what was happening, and deciding that we could probably do really well at home. And what we did that year was awesome. It was very intuitive. He said, Mom, read to me the Chronicles of Narnia. That's what I want you to do. And so that's what we did. We read the Chronicles of Narnia. I worked at teaching him to read, but this was my six-year-old. I knew nothing about teaching a child to read, and he did not have very much inclination to learn to read. So this is what it was. It would take him 5 minutes to read three words on a page, and it would be like, see, dick, oh, you know, stretch and turn around and be upside down on the couch, run. Whew, okay, whew, we got through that. You know, it was painful. It was so painful. We would work on his spelling words, and he'd get his little spelling words memorized, and then 3 days later, he couldn't write them or read them or remember them anymore. I also have fond memories of us just doing something where we would just ask questions. We'd get a big butcher paper out, and we would just ask questions. Whatever the kids wanted to know, whatever they were curious about, I'd write it up there, and then we would choose one of the questions. And for example, one of them was, what is a cave? So then we'd say, okay, what is a cave? And then we'd ask questions about caves, and then we'd go to the library and go get all the books about caves, and then we would come home and read all the books about caves, and then we would answer the questions, and then we'd go to a cave. That was the way our process of learning was. It was fabulous. It was fun. We enjoyed it. The only thing I struggled with is that I wasn't sure if I could take my kids to the grocery store during school hours. And I wasn't sure if it was okay if they had recess at odd hours. and times. Like, was it okay for them to go out when it wasn't 10:15, like the public school? I felt really like I was a fish in a glass bowl and everybody was looking in. I felt really uncomfortable with that. So anybody ever felt that way? It's like everybody's watching me, everybody's seeing what is going on. But we loved that time. We really loved that time. We did it for 2 years. By the time my oldest was in third grade and my second was in first grade, I thought we need to get serious about homeschooling. We really need to get serious about homeschooling. So I did what I knew. I knew and had a public school experience. So I got online. I didn't get online. We didn't have online then. It's a long time ago. Maybe they did have online, but I didn't have online. Anyway, I just started to figure out what to do. And I had friends who were homeschooling and more experienced than I did. I used them for sounding boards, and I ordered a whole bunch of curriculum, a health book, a math book, a social studies book, a science book. And we were so excited when those books came. We sat down and went full force into them. And it lasted for about 2 months. And then something started to shift, and my kids started saying, what do I have to do before I can do what I want to do today? And I noticed how frustrating it was for me to try to get them to do their schoolwork. And it was hard for me to, they didn't want to. Their eyes were glazing over, and I was getting frustrated. That went on for a couple of years until the point where I said, the love is gone. We're not liking this. This is not working. And so I hit the burnout mode. Meaning I can't do this unless I find another way. So that year, I hit my knees at this point. Okay, it's going to have to be something different, or I'm going to have to send them back to school. I'm going to have to send them to school. And not that I didn't hit my knees when I first homeschooled. It's just that this time I didn't know what to do. I was hitting myself up against a wall. Anybody experienced burnout? Anybody ever struggled with trying to get your kids to do their schoolwork? Do I need to ask? Okay. If you didn't raise your hand, should we just ask, are you normal? I don't know. So I'm going to just flip through this. And so I got burned out, and I hit my knees. And not long after that, I went to a Utah Home Educators Convention. And there I heard a speaker that really opened my vision. What I didn't have is a very broad vision of education. I had, you sit down, you do your math, you do your reading, you do your science, you do your things, and then you're educated. That's education. That's what I thought it was. But when I heard Oliver DeMille speak, I read his book. First, I heard him speak, and he spoke about things that I had never heard about or never even understood before. One of the things that was said in his book is his quote. It says, "In the midst of America's endless argument about charter schools and vouchers, parental choice and teachers' unions, I hear almost no one asserting that one of the things education should aim to produce is children who have what Aristotle called a great soul." This caught my attention. This opened my vision to something I hadn't really even considered. I thought I needed to have them on grade level. I thought I needed to make sure that they needed to. They could pass a test. They could go back into school. They needed to have all of this, what Oliver DeMille ended up calling it was a conveyor belt type education. And so I started to ask, well, what is a great soul? If I want my children to be a great soul, what is a great soul? How would I define that? I came up with this definition. A great soul is a person with character and virtue who works to develop their God-given genius and uses it to bless humanity. It's a little bit different than the person who's just going to pass the test, go to college, get a degree, and have a job. In fact, when one day I was taxing my one of my boys around with all of his basketball team, they're 8-year-olds, and I was their coach. But I heard one little boy say, he was kind of scoffing at the idea that my son was a homeschooled kid. He said, "Oh, that's homeschooled stuff. That's dumb." He said, "I'm going to go to college. I'm going to get a degree, and I'm going to make a lot of money, and I'm going to buy a beautiful house in Florida." And that was what this 8-year-old had already decided. That was what it was about. And that really grabbed me. So this shifted the whole dynamic and what I wanted to create in my home. And then I started asking, so what would education need to look like to make a great soul, great souls? I'm only going to be able to share briefly, just like the tip of the iceberg, some of what I learned. Oliver DeMille talks about different models of education. Actually, he's not the only one. There are three or four that I've found that also talk about the different models of education. One being a conveyor belt mentality or model where you put the child on the conveyor belt as a kindergartner. You pour in so much knowledge as a kindergartner, so much as a first grader, so much as a third grader. And in fact, you do the same thing and you learn this. All third graders learn this. All fourth graders learn this. All fifth graders learn this. So much so that that's just how it happens. And if they get behind, you try to get them caught up. And if they get ahead, you kind of put them back. So that the conveyor belt, the public model, is a good model for the fact that it educates the masses, so that it ensures that most everybody gets some kind of training, some kind of education, and it's training for a job, to get out into the marketplace. And basically, it's based in a factory model. There's a professional model where you need to have a dentist that goes through those steps. You don't want the dentist that said, oh yeah, I skipped 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5. I just went right to 7. So I don't know how to, you know, give you a shot, but I know how to fill the cavity. You know, you need to the conveyor belt in a professional model. Teaches them what to think in a certain situation. Same thing with a conveyor belt that's more teaching students what to think, not how to think. The leadership model, which is what Oliver DeMille was showing, teaches a student how to think. And it's based in great teaching. And great teaching, again, I'm only going to be able to touch on this, is based in classics, mentors, that focuses on inspiring the student. I have learned that if I can inspire my kids, they will do far more than what I would ever ask them to do. And the time isn't structured. Before it was 5 pages of math, 3 pages of this, 4 pages of that, but instead it structured the time and let the learning take place. Quality, not conformity, and made it very simple. Reading, writing, discussing, and applying what you're learning. So again, I'm gonna skip through that, but the most important here was the classics and the mentors. I had not studied classics. I read maybe 3 or 4 all through my high school years. But as a mom at age 35 when I came to this and I had 5 children, I began to study the classics. I began to spend time studying so that I could give them what I didn't have, this leadership type education. And I had some amazing experiences. One of which was before in history, I took AP US History in high school. I didn't dare take the AP test because I couldn't remember all the facts and the timelines, because history was taught from a textbook, and a textbook has a little bit, very brushes over the skim, but a classic goes deep and tells the story. So I started to study history, U.S. history, by biographies and by speeches and by documents. And as I did that, the story came clear, and I could all of a sudden tell you, yep, that's when this happened, that's when that happened, this is who this was. That's what this was going on, and now I have a clear picture of history, and that's how I've taught my children history, is through biography and documents and that kind of thing. And that has the power to touch and to go deep. One thing I had an experience with a classic. I just want to briefly show how powerful this is. I was reading Uncle Tom's Cabin in 2001. September 2001, and I was watching how this slave, Uncle Tom, was going from one master to the next, to the next, to the next, and his masters were getting progressively worse, until he was finally with Legree, and Legree was awful, so inhumane, and I was asking myself, how could this happen? How could this be? And at that time, the terrorist attacks hit. Interestingly enough is that Harriet Beecher Stowe, the author, couldn't understand the mentality of the people at the time, even Northerners, even people who did not agree, who didn't think slavery was okay. What they said was, if God didn't want it, it wouldn't be here. That was what their mentality was. Well, my little 6-year-old daughter came to me after the terrorist attack. She said, Mom, it's okay, isn't it? Because if God didn't want it to happen, it wouldn't have happened, right? And I went, oh, whoa, no. And I gave her a response that was simply, God didn't want this to happen. People have agency, and sometimes people do bad things with agency. However, it wasn't until I finished Uncle Tom's Cabin that I realized that my response to her was unfinished. It was only half a response. And I'll let you read the book, but it's one of the most powerful books about the atonement I've ever read. In the end, Uncle Tom dies at the hands of Legree, but he's been able to learn to read, and he's read the Bible, he believes in Jesus, and he says, everything is okay in Jesus as he's dying. And I realized as I finished that book that all those, that hurt and the pain that's caused by bad choices is covered in the atonement. So I was able to go back to my daughter and tell her, this is, you know, this, it's okay because of the atonement. Anyway, so quick, that's a quick story about the classics. So David O. McKay said, character is the aim of a true education, and science, history, and literature are but means used to accomplish the desired end. Character is not the result of chance work, but of continuous right thinking and right acting. True education seeks then to make men and women not only good mathematicians, proficient linguists, profound scientists, or brilliant literary lights, but also honest men combined with virtue, temperance, and brotherly love, men and women who prize truth, justice, wisdom, benevolence, and self-control as the choicest acquisitions of a successful life. This became my definition of education. This became what I was looking for, what I was reaching for. You know, I had an experience about this time where my youngest was, I had six and my youngest was two. It was March, it was a spring day, it was warm. We had spent the morning doing school and baking bread. That kind of is an interesting mix with flour and crayons and paper and dough. And so I looked at my kitchen at 11:30 and there were crayons and paper and flour and dough. The kids were happy because they'd been able to do their school but also have, you know, the bread dough to play with. And anyway, they said, Mama, can we have a picnic? So they made sandwiches and ran outside to play. And it got quiet in my kitchen, and I wrapped up a loaf of bread to take to a friend it was her birthday that day. And I got in the car, drove the quiet 2 miles to to her house. As I got out of my car, I was walking up to her front door, looked through her window, and she was sitting at her kitchen table reading a book and just eating her lunch leisurely. Her kids were at school. I knocked on the door. I went in. We visited. I looked around her house. I thought, wow, it's immaculate. Wow, it's quiet. Wow. And as I left and I was driving home, I thought, gosh, why can't I just be normal? You know? And as I drove home and I walked into my kitchen, it was a mess. It was chaotic. Learning is chaotic, okay? It just is. At best, it's chaotic. We live there. And I made myself a sandwich and grabbed the book that I was reading to the children at the time and went out to the backyard. And as I went out, I will always remember this. My little two-year-old toddled up to me and said, Mama home, and he threw his arms around my legs. And all the children gathered around, and we began to read this book. It was The Childhood of Famous Americans, a biography about John Muir, who was a naturalist who went around the world saving the places like Yosemite and Yellowstone. And as we were reading, my son, John, who was six at the time, stopped me and said, Mama, it sounds like he's being asked to speak in a lot of places. And I said, yeah, John. And the Spirit just enveloped us in that moment. It's one of the rare, well, it's not rare. It's one of the moments of homeschooling I will always remember. And I said, John, do you know that John Muir had a mission? God gave him a mission. It was to save the beautiful places of the earth. And so, yes, he did go about speaking. That was one of the things he needed to do in order to fulfill his mission. I paused, and then, John, did you know that you have a mission? He's six, right? I'm looking into his eyes, and he says, well, no. I said, it's okay if you don't know what it is right now, but you have a mission. And you have all the talents inside of you that you need in order to fulfill that mission, and God will help you. And as I looked into the eyes of each of my children, as I sat on that blanket with them, I knew that I could not just be normal. That they needed an environment that would inspire the greatness inside of them, inspire and call out that great soul. And so that's what I've sought to do. Now I'm going to just give you a disclaimer. I've done it so imperfectly, but I figure if at the end of the day it's 50-50, we're still not losing, or, you know. And some days we push up to 60-40 and 70-30. Other days, well, it's 30-70. But, you know, overall, we're pushing it. We're getting, you know, and I've read statistics, and it really does come down to having just a little bit more of the good, the positive, the inspiring versus the negative. So we're working on it. It's not perfect. And that's not the point. It's not the point of education. Education is messy, and it's not perfect. Okay, so I do want to share this. On the lines of mission, we think that mission is something we do. This comes of our societal obsession with doing. Really, mission is who we are. And because of who we are, we do certain things. Mission flows from the heart of a great soul. I want you to know how strongly I feel that the children in our homes have an important mission. And they need mothers who will nurture their mission, the mission that God has given to them. So my milestone number 5, I hit teen terrain, okay? Or what I mean by that is this is getting serious. I mean, really serious, and will what we are doing really work? I want you to know that insecurities are a blessing. In my insecurity, I turned to God again and asked him for help. What do I do? I've got these teenagers now, and I just want to make sure that we're covering the bases. Are they going to be able to take the ACT? Are they going to be able to get in college? Are they going to be able to do this and that? And I had several experiences that kind of shook me. One was with my father-in-law, who pulled me aside one day and had a really frank conversation with me. He was an attorney for J&J, very successful financially and in his career. And he said to me, "Angie, your children are not going to be able to compete." And all I could say to him was, "I think they'll do just fine. I have a gut instinct that this is what I need to do. I know I need to do this." The interesting thing is that as statistics have come out, what they want now in the world, the people who are succeeding are those who are most creative, those who can solve problems, those who haven't been taught what to think but how to think, those who can be innovative, those who know how to learn and grow, the kind of the things that you learn in homeschool. And in fact, Jay Weil is here for this conference, and I heard him speak about 5 years ago. Fantastic. And he said how they've been seeing how homeschool students are doing much better in college than public school kids. Average-wise across. So my insecurities were a blessing. And let me just share a couple of experiences. One of them is when my oldest son was about 15. Brian has always been quiet. It's just who he is. And a little bit more socially, well, you could call it backward, but I'm just calling it is what it is. It's who he is. It's what I've come to find out. But he had gone to a youth activity on Sunday evening. And then on Monday, we were driving to his piano lesson, which was a 30-minute drive. And on the way home, he said to me, "Mom, oh, I get so uptight when I go to social things. I don't know what to say. And then when I finally get the courage to say something, then I feel like I worry about what I said for days." And I was agonizing with him and thinking, "Oh, gosh, I'm sorry." Trying to figure out what to say. And then he falls asleep. Teenagers like to do that. He falls asleep, and I'm driving, going, you know, down the road, I-80 to past the Great Salt Lake and into my area. I'm thinking, "Oh, it's because we homeschooled, right?" And I'm thinking, "What am I going to do about this? You know, what am I going to do about this?" And I'm thinking, "Oh, I'm going to get him into counseling, and I'm going to get him into Taekwondo. That'll help his self-image. And I'll just take him to the public school. That'll fix everything." So I'm thinking about all these things, and I promised myself that before the night was over, I'd kneel down and ask the Lord for help. Then we went home, dinner, family night, and during family night, my daughter, who was 2 years younger, 14, we did this little thing where we talked about our talents, and we had them draw or write about their talents, and she did all these beautiful artistic frames. She wanted to do ballroom dance, and she wanted to play violin, and she wanted to perform, And I looked at that, and again, I felt this wash of overwhelm. Like, how do I do that with 6, 7 kids? I can't do all of that. And driver everywhere. So that night, I was way too tired to really pray coherently. So it was the next morning. The truth comes out. No, I was not coherent by the time we went to bed. So it was one of those quick ones. Thank you for everything. Good night. Anyway, in the next morning, I got up, offered my, I was studying my scriptures and getting that quiet time. And then I literally went to my closet with a notebook and I knelt down and I asked God, what do I do for my son? The answer was so clear. There is nothing wrong with your son. Teach him to whom he may turn to make weaknesses strengths. Now that's what I needed to hear. And then as I turned to my daughter, he said, she may perform. She may do well in those things, but teach her that the relationships she has around her are more precious than any time she spends on the stage. So I just learned in that moment that turning to him when I didn't know what else to do was key. So that's how we have managed the teen years. So then I started to ask, what is God's vision of education? What are his methods? What is education really? And then I began to think about the public model, how the stewardship goes from the federal government to the state, to the district, to the school, to the principal, to the teacher, and to the student. What's being learned, what's being taught, the methods that are being used. And I thought, my goodness, where is the parent? There is no room in that model for the parent except for the parent to tax them back and forth and go to parent-teacher conference and sometimes help in the classrooms. And then I thought, well, what if it looked like this? Could this be God's model? And I can tell you I don't know exactly what God's model is. I'm just learning. Experience. What if it was from God to the parent to the child? What if that's how the stewardship flowed? And what if those arrows, I couldn't figure out one that had the arrows going both ways, but what if the arrows went both ways? And they were responsive. What if this is what it looked like? I've come to believe very firmly that public school isn't wrong. Homeschooling isn't the only right way. Private schooling isn't the only right way. Charter schools, whatever. What I believe works is when a parent owns the God-given stewardship to go to God and ask God what is needed. What experience do my children need? And from that, they choose the school, the programs, the curriculum. That is where it's at. And then as a child gets older, wouldn't it be so cool, like it's when a child is a teen, that this is the way it looks. The child is also tapping into, this is what I need for my education. They're talking with their parent, talking with God, and it's going in this beautiful, beautiful triangle. And then, because what we ultimately want, and I don't have a diagram for this, is for it to go God to child, right? When they leave my home, I want that child to know how to tap into the instruction that God can give them. And so then I also thought about scriptures like, ask and it shall be given you, seek and you shall find, knock and it shall be opened. This is the way God educates. And as all have not faith, seek ye diligently and teach one another words of wisdom. Yea, seek ye out of the best books words of wisdom. Seek learning even by study and also by faith. We don't have time to go into this, but this was what I was thinking. What is God's way of educating? And then I thought about Enos and how Enos said, knowing my father that he was a just man, for he taught me in his language and also in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. And blessed be the name of my God. What was that? What kind of education went on between Enos and his father? And Nephi, having been born of goodly parents, therefore I was taught somewhat of it in all the learning of my father. What did that look like? If any of you lack wisdom, let him ask of God that giveth to all men liberally, and abradeth not, and it shall be given him. These are principles of education that God uses. I noticed as I really pondered these questions that God's way of educating is individualized, it's personal, it's intimate, it's like a gardener attending very to the process of growth. It's responsive to the learner's diligence and curiosity. It's wide and broad, and it's specific and detailed, and it's based in and from the family. If you look at the founding fathers, their education came from the family, and the parents decided how that education was going to go. And if they were going to use this mentor, if they were going to go to that college, or if they were going to do this, that's how it worked. Let me just tell a story or two from this point. As I really worked with this, what's God's methods of education, the way the interactions with my children changed. I began to have more of a personalized situation with them, and it worked beautifully. For example, when I asked my 8-year-old son, Hiram, you know, what do you want to accomplish this week? This was a really funny little meeting. I was tucking him in, and we hadn't had time to really talk, so he said, oh, I hate my reading book. I kind of went, okay, that's not quite the question I asked. But using the Spirit and asking what is needed, I said, Hiram, you know what? I think you're probably ready for chapter books. And his eyes perked up. He said, really? You think so? And we went over to a shelf and picked out a Magic Treehouse book, and he went to bed with it tucked under his arm, got up early the next morning and began to read. It was the Spirit working with me and through me. Another son who was 11, and he was still struggling with reading. And I asked him one day, Caleb, what do you think you need to learn to read better? He paused and he said, I need to read the Book of Mormon. I don't know if he was 9 or 10 or 11. I mean, all the stories kind of run together, but he was up there. But he said, I need to read the Book of Mormon. And in that moment, I realized exactly how to do it with him. And so basically he would read one verse 5 times and master it. And then the next day he would read the second verse, master it, and then review the first verse. Third day he would read a new verse 5 times, master it, and then review all 3 verses. Pretty soon he was reading beautifully, and that kid spends hours in the recliner reading and reading and reading and reading and reading and reading, and he's 16. It's beautiful. So I guess what I'm trying to say is when we tap into what the Lord has and we let him show us how it works. And then my last milestone was, it's time to fly. Will they fly? Can they fly? And was it enough? I'll never forget taking my second daughter, taking my son to college, my oldest, and realizing that I hadn't taught him how to grocery shop. And thinking, we're going through the grocery store, getting him all set up for his stuff. And he's like, oh, that's okay, I don't need that. Oh, it's okay, I don't need that. I said, you need peanut butter. That's okay, I'll come back and get it later. He said, you don't have anything but a bike and a backpack. Anyway, it was really funny to hear his little, you call him and say, oh, yeah, I'm riding home. I've got eggs in my computer and the backpack. I just went to the store. And I'm thinking, oh boy, he made it. He flew. But when he left, I realized this is what it really is about. Friends, this is what it's about. It's about teaching them to fly. One other experience, when I took my second child, to BYU Idaho to audition for a violin scholarship. She had practiced for 6 months, prepared for that so hard. We got to the door of the professor's office where she was going to have the audition, and she needed to knock on the door. She said, Mom, I can't knock. Mom, I can't knock. I said, Erin. And she said, you knock for me, Mama. And I said, I can't. You need to knock on that door. And when it opens, you need to walk through that door to whatever's on the other side. So there comes a time when we have prepared, we've done all we can do, except for the beautiful thing I'm finding is that I still get to, they still keep growing. This is the most recent thing that I have learned. Process, not product. Our society is a product-oriented society. So the product is, yeah, my kid's reading on a 6th grade level. Woo-hoo, I'm good to go. And she's only 4. You know, I'm safe. But we focus on the product. Really, it's about the process. And this is God's way of education and growth. It's the process, not the product. I hope I can wrap this up in a way that is meaningful to you. Recently, I was driving my 14-year-old son to Suzuki cello camp. It was a 45-minute drive, and we hadn't had a chance to have family scriptures and prayers, so I was honoring the practice by having him read to me while we were driving. Just one kid. Well, it's still family scripture study, right? So I say, Hiram, will you read the Psalm of Nephi to me, please? It's one of my favorite passages of scriptures. And as he read, I wondered how Nephi could rejoice on one side and groan because of his sins on the other side and his imperfections. And then I realized, and I started going, Yahoo, I'm not perfect. Yahoo, I make mistakes. Yahoo, I flub it from time to time. And a lot of the time, the reason I can, and the reason why I started to cheer was because that made it so that I need a Savior. And I have a Savior. So friends, in our school, in our educating, it's not going to be perfect. God's plan is not for us to come down here and do it perfectly. We're to learn by our experience. If that's helpful to you, I hope so. It totally took this misperfection need off my shoulders. It doesn't need to be perfected. I don't need to be perfect. I just need to incline my heart to the Lord and ask for his help. Like the sunflower, in Portuguese, it's a gira de sol. It turns to the sun as the sun moves across the sky. And so like the sun, like the sunflower, I encourage you to turn to God and ask for him to help you. Thank you.
Latter-day Saint Home Educators is a nonprofit, all-volunteer organization dedicated to providing inspiration to homeschool families. We hope you enjoyed this recording. If you are interested in listening to more recordings or would like to participate in a future conference, please visit our website at ldshe.org.